we're going to kick off with that that debate around the Tory MP that had very hard-hitting words to say about the Stormont House agreement yesterday. Of course, it was hailed as the deal that saved devolution, but the agreement was hailed for also for securing an economic windfall for Northern Ireland, for setting the Assembly on a bright new path, but maybe not in the eyes of one Tory MP who's branded it a racket during Northern Ireland questions in Parliament. Crispin Blunt also said the agreement was bought with £1 billion from GB taxpayers. The English MP wasn't done there. He then launched an attack on the DUP, saying he hoped the Conservatives wouldn't have to rely on the party to get into power after the next election. Mr Blunt is on the line this morning, so to the DUP MP, Sammy Wilson. Good morning to you both. Crispin Blunt, if I could start with you then. So the Stormont House deal is a racket.
Well, I just want to gently point out that when a deal of this type costs GB taxpayers £1 billion, and that's what appeared to come out of the statement yesterday, that when public expenditure in Northern Ireland is 42.5% higher per person than it is in the southeast of England, that people need to remember who's paying for this. And it can't go on and on of this case of Northern Ireland exceptionalism being made. A very substantial investment has been made in the peace process. And we can't, every time we come back to another crisis in the Northern Ireland settlement, suddenly expect it, you know, another £1 billion from the rest of the UK, and thanks very much, that'll sort it out. It's not fair on the rest of us.
So, I mean, you're obviously miffed. I mean, how representative is this of other Tory MPs?
Well, frankly, I don't think that many of my colleagues are aware of exactly how much this deal has cost. Now, admittedly, this £1 billion isn't £1 billion every year. It's £1 billion over the next decade. It is doing some. Notice that it's been ring fenced. Half of it's been ring fenced for integrated education, which is a thoroughly good thing and very long overdue. That there's a substantial investment in integrated education in Northern Ireland. I was the spokesman on Northern Ireland over a decade ago, and I was horrified at the fact of how divided the communities were right from the beginning, from the schools their children go to.
Yeah, racket's a very strong word. Maybe, you know, I don't know, one for a bit of effect in the sort of Parliament arena. But I mean, if it is a racket, I mean, it's one that your own party's part of.
Well, I'm just trying to make a point that there is a limit to the amount that taxpayers in the rest of the United Kingdom can be expected to keep on putting in to Northern Ireland. We really must expect that Northern Ireland leaders then to make the arrangements themselves. The constitutional question has been settled through the Good Friday Agreement and all that has followed.
So David Cameron and Theresa Villiers got this one wrong.
Well, in my opinion, they should not have conceded another £1 billion of expenditure from outside. They were quite right to look at the corporation tax issues, quite right to look at additional borrowing capacity for the Northern Ireland administration. But actually then to match those figures pound for pound with yet more money from the GB taxpayer, it does mean that you run the risk of a reaction from people like me, who in hard-pressed areas where we have many old people, our public services are under the most enormous strain in my part of the world, because they're expected to get by with very much less than in the rest of the United Kingdom. And of course, if you actually then factored into the amount of taxes that were being raised in my part of the UK, from the county of Surrey alone, there's an export of £5 billion a year out of the county to the rest of the United Kingdom. Now, we are, up to a point, happy to pay that to be part of the United Kingdom, but there is a limit.
Here's a reminder of some of what you said yesterday in Parliament.
Crispin Blunt. My right honourable friend will recall the behaviour of the DUP over the 42-vote exercise in the last Parliament, which cost this country about £1 billion for the deal that was done there. From the numbers she's just given my honourable friend for Amber Valley, this deal has cost the taxpayers of Great Britain another £1 billion. Does she, like me, rather fear for the fate of this country if by some mischance there was not a clear Conservative majority in the next election and an administration had to rely on that lot over there?
What have you got against that lot over there, as you described them, Crispin Blunt?
Well, I rather admire them on the people of Northern Ireland. They've been terribly effective in squeezing money out of the taxpayers of the rest.
No, but in terms of the DUP, you were referring to as that lot over there. I mean, what have you got against them?
Well, I was in parliamentary banter, trying to cheerfully to make a point that
you don't want them to be part of any coalition.
Well, I just want a marker to be put down now. Is that there is already a very substantial excess of public expenditure in Northern Ireland than there is in the rest of the UK, and if we should find ourselves in negotiations. God forbid, the Conservatives don't get a majority after the next election. Just a gentle warning to people negotiating any possible deal that there's a limit.
There's not exactly a gentle warning. You said you feared for the face of the country. That's not a gentle warning.
Well, if every vote in the House of Commons cost £1 billion for the government to get it through, which was the cost of a deal over 42 days in 2008 when the DUP switched positions to support exactly a pretty shocking measure being put through by Gordon Brown and co. It would pretty quickly become unsustainable.
Sammy Wilson, you were there yesterday. You heard it first time. We've let our listeners get a flavour of it. But what would you make of what Crispin Blunt had to say yesterday?
Well, I think that, first of all, let's just remind ourselves one of the reasons for Crispin Blunt's ire against the DUP, and he talked about the 42 days, but we didn't actually switch votes. We didn't support the cynical attempt by the Conservative opposition at that time to stop terror suspects being held for 90 days in order to be properly interrogated to stop acts of terror. And, you know, because the Tories were embarrassed about going soft on terrorism at that stage, simply to score party political points, we weren't prepared to go along with it. And there's still some in the Tory party who are angry about that, despite the fact that it happened about 7 years ago.
So, but in terms of the Stormont House deal, so we'll start with that and then I'll let you come back to that. So if sort of do it in sequence. So the Stormont House deal, the allegation that's simply a racket.
Right. And let me come to the financial deal that was struck at Stormont House. I mean, first of all, Crispin Blunt should get his facts right. We're not the only part of the United Kingdom which gets more public expenditure than what is actually raised in tax revenue, because economic activity is unevenly spread across the United Kingdom. There are parts of the United Kingdom that, because of their geographical location, because of their closeness to the seat of government, because of their closeness to the European market, etc., do better than other parts. And that is usually around the southeast of England. The northeast of England, the northwest of England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, the southwest of England, all receive substantially more from the public purse than what is put in because of those economic factors. So we're not unusual in that. That's the first thing. The second thing is this, that as far as the deal that was struck was concerned, most of the money which will be raised is simply, or which we have now available, is simply to give the Stormont executive greater flexibility in how it borrows money, what it does with the money it borrows, and what it does with capital receipts of assets which are sold. And that's in order for us to tailor our public finances to make them more sustainable in the long run. I'd have thought that Crispin Blunt would have welcomed that. The additional money is for things which the government at Westminster wants us to do, which is going to entail additional expenditure, and I think it's perfectly reasonable. If the Prime Minister and the Secretary of State asked us to do certain things, set up certain institutions, rejig our education system in a way which they want, then that a contribution towards that additional expenditure should be made. And it doesn't actually amount to £1,000 million either. But leave that aside, and it is spread over a longer period of time. That's another fact that he had wrong.
So he's way out of the mark here, you think?
If he's going to make criticisms, then at least let him get his facts right before he starts doing that.
Crispin Blunt?
Well, first of all, the point about public expenditure is obviously conceded. And though I wasn't disputing that, that there's different public expenditure in different parts of the country. But it is 42.5% higher in Northern Ireland, where it's the highest of any region of the United Kingdom, than it is in my region. And it is the people I represent who are the milch cow for this, who every time there is another crisis in political crisis in Northern Ireland, and then there is more, and it can then miraculously a deal can be done by the local politicians there, if it's then oiled by yet more money from the rest of the UK.
Your perception is that it is
perfectly proper for me to protest that, hang on a minute, we are already spending a great deal of money extra in Northern Ireland. And we really, our expectations of the political leaders in Northern Ireland are now, with all that extra money, now please sit down and get on and make it work.
And Crispin, can I just point out to you that part of the wealth of your part of the United Kingdom is due to a savings transfer which occurs from Northern Ireland to the southeast of England. Because almost in its entirety, for example, public sector pension funds are invested in the southeast of England because that's where the opportunities for the greatest return arise. That benefits your constituents, increases the tax base of your area, while at the same time draws savings out of this part of the United Kingdom. And because of all of the other geographical and other difficulties which I've said we've had, plus the legacy of the Troubles, we do have a situation where there's a greater need currently for public funds. However, the whole point of the Stormont Agreement was to, first of all, help us to reduce our dependence on public expenditure by reducing the size of the public sector workforce, but that required investment in redundancy schemes, to reduce our dependence on the public sector by growing the private sector, hence the devolution of corporation tax and the costs which there would be involved in that, and to invest in the infrastructure of the economy. So I would have thought that rather than criticise political leaders in Northern Ireland, you'd have been praising them for looking for ways of doing exactly the kind of achieving the kind of objectives that you're asking us to achieve.
Well, my observation of the discussions was that this has been a prolonged crisis from which, before Christmas, obviously we were in deep trouble when the Prime Minister left the talks, and then miraculously at the last minute, when the only thing that was being conceded to the administration was the ability to raise extra money in Northern Ireland, that then a deal is constructed which, from what I was able to work out from the statement yesterday, was going to cost
so
the taxpayers.
So, effectively, Crispin, hold on a second. Crispin, I want to ask you one thing. Effectively saying that all of a sudden your perception is that political agreement only comes about when the price is right. Is that effectively what you're saying?
Well, it has that appearance. That the extra... There didn't appear, and I confess, I have not followed this very closely, but this extra money for integrated education, that's half a billion over 10 years. And there were two other items that the Secretary of State referred to yesterday, one for 350 million, one for 150 million, which appeared to be coming extra money from the GB taxpayer. That's where I've got my billion from in the statement she made. And again, they were expenditure over the next 5 years. I think in the case of those sums, that did not appear to have been on the table until right at the end. And it was the first I've heard it, noticed it was yesterday. And has
so Sammy, is that fair? That there's this sense that there's only political agreement if the price is right. And I mean, if you were an English MP, would you maybe not be having the same concerns?
I would be having the same concerns. I mean, I've already said this on a number of occasions in the House of Commons and when I've done interviews on this show before. I do not believe in the kind of begging bowl mentality where we simply hold out our hand all the time and say, we're a special case, we need additional money. And I think we've got to be very careful of that. And when I was finance minister, I warned of exactly the same. But this is not a case of where it was simply give us money and we'll come to an agreement. I don't know why Sinn Féin finally changed their mind on the implementation of welfare reform. I'm glad that they have, and it's something which I and my party have been seeking to steer them towards for a long time, and hopefully we will now get the welfare reform situation resolved here in Northern Ireland. But secondly, we knew that in order to have a long-term sustainable budget, we had to shed a number of jobs in the public sector. That meant that we needed initial investment for voluntary redundancy schemes, and some of the additional borrowing powers are really an invest-to-save scheme, which will help us to put our finances onto a more regular basis. As far as the other money is concerned, don't forget the institutions for dealing with the past and the push towards more integrated education are things which the British government representatives at the talks wanted us to do. There were financial implications there, and quite rightly, they then took the view that if there were financial implications there and there weren't things that were factored into the budget that we had been allocated so far, then that meant additional expenditure, and that should be provided. In fact, Peter Robinson, I think, made it clear the week before the talks finally came to a conclusion when it looked like nothing was going to happen. He had indicated that he believed that the government had not reached its bottom line, but quite rightly, I actually raised the question in the House of Commons, encouraging the Secretary of State to give me an answer. Quite rightly, they were wanting to put some pressure on Sinn Féin to accept the implementation of welfare reform, and I'm glad that they did hold out because I think it had the effect.
Okay, I want to move on, and we've discussed the financial side of it. Before I go back to Crispin, I mean, what did you make of his comments then after that, Sammy Wilson, in terms of fearing for the face of the country if the Conservatives needed you lot to help them form a government?
Well, I mean, I think that that's just typical of the kind of little Englander attitude which prevails amongst some of the Tories. And as I pointed out when I spoke after him, that although the Conservative Party claims to be the Conservative and Unionist Party, it's that kind of attitude which probably does more damage to the Union than some of the nasty nationalists from Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland who sit in front of us on the opposition benches.
Yeah, so you're, the allegation is, Crispin, you're doing more damage to the Union than you are to help it. I mean, if it came down to a straight choice, Conservatives in power with the DUP or losing office, what would you go for?
We'll have to see what arrangement was on offer, whether it was the right thing to do for the country to go to a government that relied on the support of the DUP.
So you wouldn't rule it out?
Well, if the price was too high, then it would be the wrong thing to do for the country.
But it's exactly the same thing suggesting is what you're criticising. It's like a sort of financial haggle.
Well, exactly that. And decisions would have to be made would have to be...
But it's a sort of haggle that you've all... Is that not sort of similar to the sort of haggle you've described as a racket?
Well, that's why it'd be infinitely better if we're not in that position and there's a nice, clear Conservative majority at the next election to give us stable government for the next 5 years and... continue the job of righting the public finances, which were in such a terrible state by 2010. Now, that's a perfectly straightforward position. But I think what the more substantive point here is about the attitude of people in England. And I'm part European, part British, part English in terms of my identity.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I'm wondering if you could sort of combine a couple of things because we're up against the clock a little bit. But you're talking about the point being the attitude of people in England. So what would the attitude then be if we see the power to raise our own levels of corporation tax here in Northern Ireland or to lower them or whatever they decide to do? What do you think would happen there? What would the reaction be in England if Northern Ireland had its own corporation tax powers?
Oh, I don't think I wouldn't have the slightest problem with that, which I think is why it's been cheerfully conceded. If Northern Ireland can make itself competitive, and we're recognising the particular position that Northern Ireland faces itself in against the corporation tax competition that is then coming from south of the border, and that's, you know, that issue has been kicking around for quite a while.
And you think Northern Ireland's a special case, and if Scotland wanted to do the same, then how would you feel about that?
Well, Scotland is, of course, more than three times the size of Northern Ireland in terms of population. So you would have to look at what the relative economic impact is, and it doesn't have a border, a land border with another jurisdiction, which is pursuing a highly aggressive corporation tax policy, which is the situation in Northern Ireland. So there are pluses and minuses about making the overall taxation administration in the United Kingdom ever more complicated, but we've been cheerfully conceded the position that Northern Ireland could benefit from these arrangements, given the particular circumstances.
I want to go to Sammy Wilson on this as well. The Shadow Secretary of State, Ivan Lewis, he voiced some concerns about this yesterday. We are expecting a big announcement from the Secretary of State later on today in terms of corporation tax, but here's what the Shadow Secretary of State Ivan Lewis had to say yesterday at Westminster.
We remain concerned at the government's rush to introduce legislation on corporation tax devolution, a decision which will have profound implications for Northern Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom. We believe there should be a proper consultation process, including an analysis of the financial impact of significant reductions in corporation tax on Northern Ireland's block grant before introducing legislation in this House.
That was Ivan Lewis speaking yesterday. Sammy Wilson, what did you make of that? I mean, does that concern you, or is it not reasonable for Ivan Lewis and Labour to urge a bit of caution on this?
Well, I mean, we'll give Ivan Lewis a bit of a fool's pardon in this because he is relatively new into the job. But the truth of the matter is that we have had this debate about corporation tax going on in Northern Ireland now for about 6 years. There has been consultation on it. We know what the financial implications are going to be. And, of course, there would be consultation. There would have to be consultation by law. Again, once we introduced a measure to reduce the level of corporation tax to whatever percentage we decided to do.
Yeah, but is he not basically echoing concerns that you yourself had? Maybe, you know, go back 4 or 5 years, when you yourself said that the redistribution of money from jobs in the public sector to the pockets of shareholders in the private sector wouldn't necessarily bring about the rebalancing of the economy that you and many others had publicly advocated.
Well, I've always made it very clear, and I say this as an economist, that no one can be absolutely certain about the impact of any fiscal measure of that nature. We know, if we look at what has happened south of the border and in other countries, that a reduction in corporation tax has increased private sector investment, but there are many other factors which go along with that as well.
So he has reservations, course, just like you, basically.
Well, yes, and, you know, anybody with any titter of wit will understand the risks which there are with this. But the job of politicians is to make a judgment as to whether or not this is a risk which is worth taking. And if it is a risk worth taking, then to start down that process as quickly as possible.
So would you like to see it pass before Parliament before the general election?
Well, I think that we've got to have certainty around this, because don't forget, Arlene Foster is going to have a particular difficulty when it comes to attracting foreign investment and new investment in the future, because she's losing some of the levers which she has with selective financial assistance because of EU rulings. And if she doesn't have some other means of giving incentives to firms to come and invest in Northern Ireland, then she's going to have be presented with a particular difficulty. And it's one of the reasons that, despite my reservations about how effective the measure might be, it's one of the reasons why I believe that it is necessary that we get the powers as quickly as possible, that the Assembly then makes a decision what it wishes to do with those powers, and then Arlene Foster can go out and sell Northern Ireland on the basis of whatever decision we make.
I want to squeeze a couple of callers in as well, just if we can, before the headlines. Robert's in Belfast. Morning, Robert.
Good morning, Joel. Mr. Blunt, I would like to ask you if Northern Ireland won for independence, would the Tory party go into panic mode the way they've done with Scotland? Also, I would like to know, why is Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland and England, why does the Treasury remain within the England? Why is the our own local Treasuries right across the regions not been... I hate this sort of system that you're saying that everybody's going with a begging bowl. I think that's a bit of a myth to your party.
Crispin Blunt has actually... He's had to leave us, Robert, but you've made your point. Mervyn's in Hollywood. Morning, Mervyn.
Hi, are you?
I'm very well.
Okay, thank you. Is Sammy there?
He is, yes.
Yes.
Good morning, Sam. It's Mervyn here.
Morning.
Sammy, as a DUP voter, I'm going to say this now. I'm very concerned at the fact that we're about to lay off many, many thousands of people and work in Northern Ireland here to prop up the private sector. Is that not one hell of a political risk?
No, we're not doing that. And I mean, that's not the reason for laying off or for trying to reduce the size of the number of people working in the public sector. What we have to do is to try and ensure that we have got a budget which is sustainable for the future. And we know that currently, with the way in which the budget is spent, that we have less money to spend on direct services, for example, when it comes to health and education, which are priorities which the population has set. And therefore, we are looking at where we can make efficiencies within government departments by digitalisation, by amalgamating departments, etc., in order to reduce the wage bill so that we have a budget which we can live within and can also provide for some of the frontline services which we have to provide for at present. And, you know, if I could just point out to you that over the period, and this was a deliberate decision, over the period of the last 4 years when budgets were being cut, we deliberately took a decision not to cut the number of people employed in the public sector. And indeed, when I was Finance Minister 4 years ago, the number of people we had in the civil service hasn't changed. In fact, there's 11 more today than what there was 4 years ago, even though we have had about an 8% cut in our budget. That means we're probably carrying a surplus of people that we don't need to carry, but to get rid of them, we need to give voluntary redundancies. And that's where we need the additional money to pay for that investment. That will then free up resources which we can then use for some of the kind of frontline things that people want us to spend money on.
I'm conscious we're struggling for time, but one final thought, Sammy Wilson, before you go. If we don't see corporation tax powers devolved but before the general election, is it a tool that the DUP MPs would use as a sort of a haggling bargaining chip in terms of who they may support whenever it would come to the possibility of supporting a Labour or a Tory coalition?
Well, Joel, I think that the first thing that we want to do is to ensure that we go back to Westminster with the maximum number of MPs to give us the biggest leverage that we have. Should there be a hung parliament, of course, nobody can be absolutely sure that that's going to happen.
Yeah, but would you use corporation tax powers as a bargaining chip?
Well, the second thing is we would then have to sit down and look at what kind of things we would set as priorities for dealing with any administration that wanted our support, and certainly corporation tax would be high up the list. But I wouldn't like to have to wait until then, because I think we've already made the case for the devolution of corporation tax, and I wouldn't like to have to fight that battle all over again. I trust that the Secretary of State will live up to the promise which he made yesterday in the House of Commons, and that is to get the powers through before the new parliament comes into being.
Okay, Sammy Wilson, thank you very much. Also, Crispin Blunt.